following program is brought to you by your friends at Podcast One.
It's the Stone Cold and Jackal Show!
Really? That's what you came up with for our intro? Bradford Anderson.
Stevie B. So, are you a sweater?
I sweat a little bit.
Have you, you know those sweats where your heart races because something tragic has happened? And tragic is a relative word.
Sure.
But
when in the moment, it was tragedy.
In the moment, when something happens and your pulse races, and you start sweating and you just start repeating, no, 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 no. No, no. I know it's sometimes you feel that when I walk towards you with my mouth open and my eyes closing when I'm going in for a kiss or something. But I can't. I felt something I haven't ever really felt recently, and it was we recorded something pretty special, and I had it in my possession, and all of a sudden I did not anymore. And it was like the Apple gods decided that it was too good to be heard, and they took it from me. No fault of my own, although I'll take full responsibility.
Sure.
And I called you in a panic.
Well, yeah, I got a bunch of texts first, though, and that you were going to throw up and crying.
I thought I was going to throw up. I dry heaved a couple times. It was one of the scariest. I know this sounds silly, but it was truly one of, like, the scariest moments of my life.
Well, look, especially when you're the Jackal and it was an epic fail.
Yes. So it reminded me the fact that I play one on TV. I play technical expert on TV, but in real life, I pale in comparison.
Yeah.
And,
you know, when I got your text that the podcast that we did, that was awesome, that it disappeared, and I know you were on the phone with Apple and everybody,
and they couldn't figure it out,
and sometimes you just got to chalk it up to things happen for a reason. And I know it hurts, and I know it, that pit in your stomach's horrible, but things happen for a reason. And we had an amazing conversation with the amazing Maurice Bernard, and we lost that whole audio file. And you know, I know you were hard on yourself, but
I'm still hard on myself.
I know you are. And but luckily,
yeah,
our good friend Maurice Bernard agreed to sit down again.
I can't believe it. And he's on the same couch with me. He actually is in the same proximity.
So go, you can just tell him.
Hi, bud.
This is Maurice Bernard, ladies and gentlemen.
Hi.
Oh my goodness.
I want to know, Steve said he was going to tell you, well, how did that go?
Well, it was kind of like, at first I felt bad for you.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, not a lot, but.
that means so much to me.
Yeah, but I did. And then I thought, like, well, all right. Well, you know, I didn't think I was going to be doing it again. So I was like, you know, that's done. And then what started coming through my head was, it was maybe one of the most free I've been.
Right.
During a podcast.
And now that's taken away. And I want to just wrap my hands around your neck.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
In a loving way.
It depends what mood I'm in. but you know,
he was in a good mood that day too, thank God.
Yeah.
When I told him, he's like, okay, I get it. But it is, look.
But I will say this. After that interview, there were times that I thought I may have said things that I shouldn't have.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And you know, and that's that, you know, but in a way, you know, with me, any interview that I've done on TV or whatever, I just go with the truth always.
Sure. Right.
But sometimes you have to
monitor yourself.
A bit.
Yeah.
Because you don't know what gets out.
Well, plus, you know, when you do, you know, and a lot of this was your past with being bipolar and figuring that out and this journey that you've gone on to get here. But, you know, in some of those other interviews, you have to, you kind of know what you're going to say, and it's limited and it's controlled, right? And it's controlled by them. Time-wise. We were free enough to sit here and talk, and you were, you know, basically opening up like you've never opened up before, which is amazing. But then there is that point where you're like, ah, should I have said this or that, or how's this going to be perceived and all this stuff? But guess what? We don't have to worry about that.
No.
thanks to Bradford.
You're welcome?
No, that's not you're welcome.
No,
but now I'm just thinking, like, you know, you kissed my ass a lot on that last one, and I'm just waiting or hoping that my ass is kissed
a lot on this one.
Yeah.
Well, it always is.
I know it always is, and you've been one of the best.
You've been one of the best ass kissers around.
But sometimes when you kind of kissed ass already,
it feels ingenuine at that point.
Then you don't say, you know, because before when you introduced me, it was like a big deal. Like, now Maurice Bernard, the thing, the actor, right? Great man, whatever. And now it's like, hey, he's on the couch.
That's not it. Because I could start the intro. I could start the intro all over again. Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
We have been waiting for this moment.
In the building.
The legend.
The legend.
Oh, God.
The great friend and mentor and father.
The handsomest.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Maurice Bernard.
The dimples himself.
Today you told me you're going to do a movie. Let's just talk about that first, because we did touch on something cool in that conversation.
Yeah, I just talked to the writer. It's a cool film. Going to New York, I play a police captain, and
who's it with?
Ice-T.
Yeah.
He's a legend.
He is a legend. Believe it or not, because I grew up on hip hop.
I know you,
and I know that sounds funny to most people, but Ice-T, man, that guy was groundbreaking. Well,
did he create rap?
No, he didn't create it.
Who did?
Yeah. Oh man, it goes back to the 70s.
I mean, he was there early on,
right? He was there early on. It was kind of the time where it was, you know, Eric B and Rakim, Ice-T, Ice Cube, N.W.A. All these guys were, you know, when Colors came out, remember? The movie Colors? Because he did Colors, the soundtrack.
But who was before that then in rap?
Oh, I mean, Run DMC was before him, and Grandmaster Flash, and, you know, all these, you know, there's a lot of guys before him, and I can't think of them all, but Ice-T's awesome, man. I used to love his album.
See, you were CD. Big on that.
Yeah, Ryan Pays was one of my favorite albums. So what's
basically
the movie about?
It's about two undercover cops. They're by a car, and these other two cops come up, and they kind of tell the two undercover cops, what are you guys doing? And the guys go, I'm a cop. Well, one guy brings out a lighter, or try to get his badge. He brings out a lighter, and the cop shoots. So the one guy, the undercover cop,
shot another,
and he kills a cop.
Oh no!
And the movie's about, and they're on the same you know, they're on.
Yeah. Is this modern day?
This is modern day. Yeah. Yeah, but maybe a couple years ago, what really happened.
Sure.
And I dig it. I dig it. We'll see. You know, we'll see what happens.
That's cool, because I know for you, playing Sonny for so long and going through all these storylines in a mixture of your manic depression and being bipolar, I know that a lot of these stories weigh you down.
Yeah.
And I know in the last couple of years, you've been able to go out and do other stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of other stuff, too.
Yeah, yeah, quite a bit.
So how has that kind of helped you mentally with the workload here?
Well, the workload, it just becomes more workload. What it helps is mentally that I don't feel like I'm stuck here.
Right.
Like, do you read the script differently, having read other scripts in between? Like, I don't know, sometimes when you're reading the same character lines over and over again, it becomes kind of You're just in a cycle of, okay, I do it this way. But then you go out and do a different character, do a different thing. And then you come back, you see it with different eyes maybe a little bit, right?
Yeah, that's a good question, because what I do is with my roles outside of here. Well, it's what I did with Sonny when I first started.
Sure, yeah.
Is I do what Howard Fine taught me in the actor studio, which is do a bio, who the guy is, how many sisters he has, how many brothers he has, and I write on page, and you become this guy in kind of mentally, and then I start figuring out what kind of haircut he has, you know, is he big, is he tough, is he this, and I do that kind of work, which I don't do here,
because you've done it already.
Yeah, I've done
it. You didn't teach me that part.
Well, you didn't.
I know, but because obviously you've helped me a lot, and we'll get into that story. But yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, no,
that's
no.
interesting homework. No, because, I never even thought about that.
Because you didn't need it really here. It's
sure.
I just kind of taught you the actor studio as far as personalizing and everything.
Right.
And that I kind of do now, the personalizing, which I haven't done in a long time. because there's a part of this story that I'm in that I'm very into.
Yeah.
And now I'm personalizing.
GH story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
also with Matt, with yeah, Max yeah, Dale, yeah. father, son.
Yeah. And my stuff with you that has to do with that. Now I'm adding him. And man, when you personalize, it's a.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
And you have to understand with me, it's a tough situation because, you know, being bipolar, suffering from depression, suffering from anxiety. How deep. You know, when I was younger, I felt like I can tackle anything, right?
Yeah.
And I would go make these choices that are deep and everything. But as I've now, as I'm, you know, older.
Oldish. Not, you're not, yeah, exactly. You're not oldish. Old, man. Yeah.
I don't, I'm afraid, man. I'm afraid to go to those places. When I did Ghost in the Whale, the movie my wife produced, I say it a lot, I was losing my head in that one.
Really?
I really was, man.
Yeah, it's...
It was... Let's just put it this way. I would be in the house. I was out there. I was in the house. And... Because this guy's losing his mind. So I would be in the room, and I was hearing noises, man.
Whoa.
And I was angry. And I would take it out on... I don't like doing that, you know?
Yeah, that's...
Taking it out on my wife and... But I was, and I remember one scene in particular where I had to do like 7-page monologue, and I knew I had to nail it, otherwise I wasn't gonna get the power from the people watching and the crew and stuff. So I did it, and we did it in one take. And I thought I was Al Pacino, you know. And they come out and they're like, I'm like, what?
The directors?
Yeah, the director.
Yeah.
And I said, what? He goes, I don't know. I don't think it's enough.
You don't, wait.
He wanted you to go further?
Yeah. Further, bro.
Oh, really?
Further, bro. Okay.
Really?
This is a good story. And I said, okay, really? You know me, I get kind of upset. And then Paula, I said, tell my wife to come out here. So Paula comes out.
Get the producer out here now.
Yeah. And we're sitting down in a chair. And I said, what is it, baby? I thought that, she goes, honey, it wasn't great.
Ooh.
And I said, well, what do you mean it wasn't great? She goes, you got to go way further.
Wow.
I said, okay.
Hmm.
So what if, I said, baby. I said, what if there's a point of no return, honey?
Okay? Yeah, you know what? That's interesting because there is that balance, right? Because you're afraid if you go too far. For you mentally,
right.
But not only that, that might be the last take.
Right.
That might just be it for you.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And I don't know if fans or listeners understand that, but there's a point where you can't go to that space over and over and over and over again. You get one
now,
or
I
two,
get your point.
One
get
or
your
two
point.
Good ones,
and
right?
You're absolutely right. That could have been my last take. So
acting wise and mentally,
both.
Yeah.
So
right.
She says, "I said, what if?" She goes, "Okay, so then fine." So I did it, and I was out of my head, dude.
Wow.
Out of my head. It's probably the best acting I've ever done because I was so out of control and it was so long and the pages and whatnot. But the next day, I said to my wife, I said, baby, what if I don't – she goes, that will not happen. I said, how do you know? And she said, because I believe you're stronger than that. Wow. Yeah. And I said – well, good. You believe that. but I kept saying, yeah. But we don't know.
What about me?
What's the point of no return? So it can get difficult. But, you know, it's fine. And I survived. But I do believe, although I feel great now, but I do believe because of everything that I've done and those places that I've hit, being mentally ill, I think it does – take something out of you, man.
I've seen it take something out of you. I've seen it for over the years.
Yeah.
I've seen it. I've seen you on the borderline of what you're talking about a couple times.
I know you have.
Being here.
I know you have.
You know, and there's definitely a change in you. And I would always say it. I would say, why are you having this guy have a nervous breakdown on the show when you know he's a method actor,
yeah,
and he's going to go all the way. It took you years to learn how not to go all the way.
Yeah.
But you know, it was like now, and now with the good thing about the deal with Max is, and the Alzheimer's story, which I think you're doing a fantastic job, and Max Gale's freaking the man, right?
Yeah.
So what's interesting about that is it's so close to your dad's age, right? Like,
yeah.
What Max and you guys are doing, it's so real because
yeah.
your dad, I mean, I know yeah, your yeah. father's near, I don't know if they're the same age, but it's, I mean, you posted
yeah.
something on Instagram.
Oh, it's,
you got, it's like crazy.
It's twins.
It's amazing, right?
Yeah.
So, but, you know, it's interesting for you to have to find that balance of how do I not kill myself and still give the great work that you give? You know what I mean?
That's the deal, yeah.
So Paula, your wife.
Yes,
has been there since day one. When did you guys meet?
Oh yeah. Oh,
that's a good... okay. Here's the deal: we met. She was 16, working at a mall, a shopping mall called Sun Valley.
Wow.
And this was up
in Martinez, near San Francisco. Okay. And I walked in with my buddy, and she was dancing.
What?
Is this when you had your mustache? Just so I know.
The mustache. No, I think I'd done with the mustache by then. But we walked in, she's in a line. You know, it was merry-go-round. Remember that store, merry-go-round?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
Well, it was merry-go-round, and she was dancing, and she comes up, and she was cute.
Of course.
And she big eyes and stuff. And shy. And I said, hey, what's going on? I did the whole thing. You know.
Is that when you told the story one time about going to malls?
Yeah, I'd go to malls.
In a persona almost.
Oh, no. That was
later.
That was when I was
that was later. Okay.
I'd go to malls to look for girls.
Well, okay.
Sure. Yeah, as we all did. That was like the only place to go.
That worked for you guys?
Yeah, it worked.
Well, I got married.
That's
yeah.
right. There you go.
Yeah.
But she, you know, and then she's like, she's 16. I said, all right, we'll pick you up. And I said to my buddy Manny, I said, I can't do this, man. She's 16, you know. I was 21, whatever. And he goes, yeah, she's too young. So I stood her up.
So, in the most gentleman stand-up of all, because you were just looking out for
yeah,
her.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I didn't want, yeah, well, of course. You know, so about I don't know how much longer. I went back in there, and there she is. And then she's now 17. So I said, "How you doing?" She goes, "Good, good." I said, "She goes, you stood me up." I said, "Yeah, you're just too young, you know." And I felt kind of weird. You know, you're 17.
That's awesome.
And then I said, you want to go out, get your friend or my buddy Manny? She goes, sure. And so I took her out and brought her back to my mom and dad's house. And we watch TV and have good time. And I always say that after I kissed her, it was like magic. She couldn't
run away. You hypnotized her.
I hypnotized her. And well, the beautiful story about this is not that, but I don't know. You know, there was something there, but not. It wasn't like this is I'm going to marry this girl. It was just one of those things. So we started going out, and it was maybe 3 months later. I come home. And there's my she never allowed me to pick her up at her house.
Oh, right.
She never allowed me. So I'd go, or I'll pick you, but not at my house. Pick me up at the mall.
Was there a reason that you found
she
out?
She never gave me a reason.
Oh.
I said, well, what's going on? So I said, I'll pick you up. You know, no, not there. Pick me up at the corner. You know, I'm going to start crying now because of this now. Okay, so one night I'm like, you know what? I got off of acting class and I had this big long coat and I thought it was like cool. I said, I'm picking her up. I know her address. So I knock on a door and I'll never forget. And I don't want to get too specific because I don't
want to get
people to think that. But her mother opened the door, and it was basically she kind of lived with drug addicts.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
So when I came, I said, hi, it's Paula here. And there's Paula running across the room because because she had no makeup.
Oh,
she was just a
She
had no makeup, and she's running, and she's embarrassed that I'm in the house now.
Yeah.
And everybody's looking at me like, who's this dude? Who's this dude smoking?
Yeah.
Smoking. And then the mother's like, you know, and I'm like, what? It's like a Twilight Zone.
Right.
Yeah.
So then I understood
why. Yeah.
Why she wouldn't let me pick her up. So about 3 months later, I come home. And there's my mom and Paula and my dad crying at the table. And my mom comes up. I said, what's happening? And she goes, Paula's going to be living with us. I said, hold on.
Wait a minute.
I mean, I care about her, but I don't know sure if it's time, you know. And she goes, her mother OD'd.
Wow.
And she didn't have anywhere to go. So I said, okay. I said, all right. And that was that. So she moved in.
And wow. That was it.
Yeah, but you know, the situation wasn't quite.
Sure.
I had to tell Paula that, look, I'm not ready to.
Yeah.
So.
This isn't us moving in together.
Right.
This is a different thing.
Right. You're staying here.
Yeah.
And I know some people may see that as like not a cool move.
No.
Well.
I respect that.
Look, first of all, everybody doesn't know everybody's story, right?
Right.
And backstory
right.
and life. Yeah. And Paula didn't have the greatest upbringing.
No.
And a lot of people don't. And, you know. It was very kind of your parents to be like, hey, come on in.
Yeah.
We're going to take care of you. It's fine. Stay here. You're good.
Yeah.
But that's got to be awkward for you two anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, it had to be kind of, what? You're moving? What?
Yeah,
you're living with me?
Yeah.
What?
It was awkward, but it, you know, obviously it turned out incredible. But it's funny you say that my mom and dad did that for her, and now my mom and dad are living with us.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but you two, but you and Paul have taken, your cousin?
Oh, my Paula's sister is now Paula's daughter.
Got it. Right.
So we adopted Heather.
Right. So you guys have done the same thing.
Yeah, we've done
also.
It.
And you take care of each other.
Yeah, it's family. We take care. I'll never forget when Heather we adopted Heather, and oh man, it was incredible. We were in the room, and Heather said to my wife, "Is it all right if I call you Mom?"
Oh man!
And it was nothing like it, man.
Oh!
And I was crying. I didn't want anybody to see me crying, but I was crying. And Paula said, "Yeah, you can call me Mom."
Wow!
Wow!
It was incredible.
Did your when she moved in with you back then? Did your parents say, "All right, we got to keep the doors open"? Like, was it like kind of because they knew you were dating, right? Like,
my parents have been always so cool in that way, like carefree, and they're not strict, and they're just.
When you guys were adults too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Okay.
How long have you guys been together now?
Over 30 years.
Wow, that's an amazing story. And I know she's been with you. The reason I brought her up is I know she's kind of the rock in your family, and she's been there since day one through your incredible journey.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm curious, like, how that – your transition from living your life in Martinez to going through the things that brought you to L.A. – and what a ride that you guys have been on together. And that was because, you know, because that's it's a big transition.
Yeah. I mean, Paula has been through a lot of stuff. I mean, with me, it's what makes Paula strong is what she went through as a child and her family being who they were, drug addicts and whatnot. And then she had to deal with that, and then now deal with a husband or a boyfriend who's mentally ill.
You know, last podcast that disappeared because of the jackal. We talked.
The
we
jackal got, failed. Hashtag.
Actually, it was the day or two after that Anthony Bourdain that we found out. It was kind of the heaviness there, and I know that, you know, when we talk about manic depression and being bipolar, and nowadays people are starting finally to recognize that. You know, all these celebrities are taking their own lives. And, you know, before it was the awareness is getting out there. And you've done a tremendous job at doing that. But it's like, you know, before these guys were just dying from alcohol or drug overdose, but nobody really knew what was going on in their head.
No, right.
And wasn't being really recognized as, hey, this guy suffers from depression. It doesn't matter how much money he has, who he is, his fame, his celebrity, his family, whatever. You have a platform and you've done it.
Yes.
But you could be actively, I feel, out there. Your story is so incredible and your journey has been so incredible to where you are today that you have a lot to offer people who suffer, especially from any kind of depression or anxiety or anything, you know, on knowing people. I think the biggest thing is people need to know that they're not alone going through what they're going through.
Yeah, yeah, and asking for help.
And that's the thing,
that's
right?
The main thing. I've been trying to figure out what's a solution, what's a fix. We have to start looking. With me, it's never been a problem because I don't like feeling that pain. So I ask for help always.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't ask for help. But we got to start getting in, because it seems like when you don't ask for help is when you start. There's a lot more suicides because people, they can't help you.
But isn't that a lot? I mean, so it's interesting, kind of diving into that mentality of, are they not asking for help because they're scared, or is it because of ego, or is it because they feel like maybe nobody else is going through it or will understand it? I know it's a combination of all those.
All of the above.
But the people who don't ask for help, like all these high-profile people, do they not know what they have?
They do know.
Do they know that?
This is just from my opinion. People, well, my dad asked me a lot, but why, what is it? If somebody's happy, they have money, they have, you know, they're rock stars or this. I said, Dad, here it is for me. The pain is so unbearable that sometimes you can't think of going another day with it.
Right.
That's my – now, there could be other reasons for different people, but mine is that, because I have felt that unbearable pain many times. Now, thank God that you know, I don't go through with it.
Well, and you have a support system. And you have people that love you. That
yes,
that,
yeah, yes.
Do you think social media and media reporting on certain things, like, you know, we didn't just hear about Robin Williams. We heard about how he did it. We didn't just hear about Kate Spade. We heard about how she did it. We hear, and it, do people that maybe identify or relate to what they're feeling, and obviously they can't be certain, see that way out as, oh, well, that person couldn't handle it, so no wonder I can't handle it. And what, it, you know, if someone that is someone like Anthony Bourdain that has gets to travel and gets to do all these things and has a life that looks great to me, if he can't handle it, then what hope do I have?
Yeah, wow, that's I never saw it from that angle.
You know, and
but I think it's a good angle to see it from.
You know, that's
but that's the catch 22 though, right?
Yeah.
With social media is it is out there, and it I think people view that as what you're saying, Brad, is like, I might as well, you know, if they're doing it, what hope do I have? And the whole thing just sucks. It's just sad, you know, and nobody really understands it unless they know somebody or they've gone through it or they know somebody who suffers with it, because for so long it was just kind of get over it. Yeah. You'll get past it. Yeah. Look, you're going to have days where it's bad and days where it's good. Right?
Right.
Oh, days where you're manic, days where you're depressed.
Well, if you're on your medication, you're going to even out, and it's not going to be such an up and down.
Brad.
Steve.
You know where I want to go?
Where do you want to go, buddy?
I want to go to Disney World.
Ooh, can I go with you?
You can't. We actually did go.
I know.
You know, that was the sad part about Super Soap Weekend being, you know, eliminated was that was my only chance to go to Disney World instead of Disneyland all the time.
Right.
And I want to bring my kids to Disney World. And
they're different. They're uniquely special.
And it's a lot more, I don't want to say work, but
well, Disney World is massive. There's so many things there that wouldn't it be nice? You know, we had these little guides when we went for Super Soap, but wouldn't it be nice to have a guide like that when you're planning your trip? Because some of these Disney resorts, they're so massive, there's so much to do. It would be wonderful to have like a Disney concierge that could help you plan your trip, so you're making sure that you're hitting all the places you want to hit.
And there is that, because I never even knew that this service existed with Middle of the Magic Travel.
Middleofthemagictravel.com.
They set everything up for you.
Yeah.
Dining reservations.
Fast passes.
Fast pass.
All the
hotel,
reservations you need.
Travel.
It's everything you need.
It's everything you need. It's literally your concierge service at your fingertips. And I've talked to the people over there. Great customer service, by the way, because
sure.
They're all Disney
enthusiasts. Well, they're an authorized Disney vacation planner, too.
I think that's important.
Yeah, they're all Disney fanatics themselves.
Yeah, and they're authorized, which is a huge thing because
you need to have the relationships. Yeah.
Absolutely right.
And so you can help you with your trip to Disneyland, Disney World, but also pretty much all things Disney, right? Adventures by Disney, Disney Cruise Lines, Disney's Aulani Resort in Hawaii, which we are both dying to go to.
I know, I can't wait.
And Disney's beach resorts in Vero Beach,
I'll go
Florida,
to Vero Beach.
And Hilton Head, South Carolina.
And I'll go to Hilton Head, too.
We'll go to all of them. We'll check them out for you guys. So in each of their travel planners, they have different specialties in planning the vacations. They have agents that specialize in special needs travel, special diets, multi-generational travel, and even adult only. Make sure you're not missing anything on your trip. Everyone wants their Disney trip to be magical. Make sure you capture all the magic with a little help from middleofthemagictravel.com. And if you go to middleofthemagictravel.com/Steve and Brad, you can start planning your fee-free.
That's
the big
thing. That was
amazing.
What I wanted to say.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Well, say
fee
it, dude.
Free. And I actually, you should say it because you're the cheap one, but, but fee-free as long as you book a package with them,
yeah,
which
is amazing.
If you
book your travel through them, all that service, that concierge service, is just part of the package.
I mean, that's giving value to somebody.
And starting this week, if you go to middleofthemagictravel.com/Steve and Brad, you can get a free surprise vacation box when you purchase a 3-night or more package. The vacation box could include autograph books, pens, mouse ears, lanyards, trading pins, and Starbucks cards.
middleofthemagictravel.com/Steve and Brad.
So how did... when did you kind of know that you were struggling with this bipolar or manic depression, or what was the first time you had a real breakdown?
Well, I think when it started, and I don't want to blame Michael. I don't even want to say his name, Michael Olton. I was modeling in San Francisco, very unsuccessful.
I can't believe that.
Oh my God, it was the worst.
Very unsuccessful.
It was the worst. I had to lie to get in.
You had to lie. Why?
I went to a modeling school. That's the story. And
well, this is a funny story because
The girl I was dating. I was dating a girl that I met on a beach that was a model, and she was way above. You know, I was like, I tell my buddy Jeff, I said, let's go, you know, go to these, try to maybe get a date with these girls.
Malls, beaches.
Yeah,
yeah,
beaches.
That's it.
Tell me. Yeah.
That's it. Bradford's never been to neither of those.
Clearly.
And I went up to her and she said, yeah. So we started going out and she says to me, you ever thought of modeling? I said, because I was a tough guy then.
Yeah.
This is funny because... You know, you're riding around in your lowrider.
Oh yeah,
in high school.
I had a lowrider and the whole thing with true spokes, rims, and I didn't have a hydraulics, but I had you heat the springs, and it was amazing.
What does heating the springs do?
It makes it
lowers it.
Oh.
So in high school, you kind of would get into fights and just be the, you know.
Yeah, in high school I was, but I was friends with the jocks, the stoners. And everything.
Every clique.
Yeah, but I was probably the first or second toughest guy in the school. Bob Haynes.
Oh, yeah.
Was the toughest. He was a big dude.
Big
man.
Bob.
Big Bob.
Yeah, sounds tough.
Yeah, Big Bob. He was like, I remember one time we went from 7-Eleven to school, and we were in the back of a truck, and he goes, F you.
just out of the blue.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You were in the back of a pickup truck.
Yeah, and I looked at him. I said, what? He goes, F you. I said, F you. He said, F you. And I said,
he was waiting for something.
I guess.
So he just wanted to start a fight?
Maybe. So all the way to the school, it's F you, F you, F you, F you.
Dude, you're doing a Meisner exercise. You didn't even know it.
Dude, that would have been amazing if you guys stood up in the back of a moving pickup truck and started having a fight.
Well, I mean, we get to the school, and he looks at me and goes, F you. And I said, F you too, man. And
did you start saying it lovingly after
no,
a while?
No, no, it was just staring at each other. So finally,
dude,
I said,
that's like two freaking pit bulls.
Yeah, and I was pretty big then, and he was bigger. And I said, "All right, what now?"
Yeah, where do you go from there?
You don't.
He smiled, and that was it. There was nothing. We didn't fight.
That's funny.
But yeah, I was.
I gotta try that.
So I was bringing that up because I know, you know, we talk about that stuff all the time, and so you met this girl. So it just made me laugh that you went from that to F you to do my little dance on the catwalk, dude. I mean, talk about what? How do you go from being like in the Outsiders, right?
Right.
To
Pony Boy.
To hey, I'm here.
No, dude, I didn't.
I'm
want
here
to,
for the modeling job,
but I didn't have anything else. And she's like, "I said, how much money?" She goes, "Like $200 an hour." I said, "How do I do it?"
Yeah, right.
So I did have my mustache because she goes, "You're probably gonna have to shave your mustache."
Oh man,
and cut your hair. I said, well, "All right, $200 an hour." So I went to a modeling school, and it was so stupid.
What do they teach you at modeling school?
What he just did on the dance floor.
Yeah,
do your little shake.
I'm so sexy for my legs.
Yeah.
So you know they teach you how to walk. They teach you how to pose.
Yeah.
So I did it, and they give you a little portfolio for like $1,000. All right.
Right.
Oh, you pay them.
Yeah. So then I take the portfolio to Gramet, which was the biggest agency in San Francisco, and I'll never forget. He says, "How tall are you?" I said, 5'11". He said, "Is that with or without heels?" I said, "No, with heels. I'm 6'1".
Yeah.
And he goes, he knew I was lying. So I had to wear like stupid, high heels and stuff. I don't like not feeling honest and real. I don't like feeling fake. And as a model, I was fake the whole time.
Yeah.
It was just not good. So I'd work like once every month and a half, 2 months. It was just a little job that kept me, I'm going to be a big model.
Yeah.
How tall are you? Oh, it doesn't matter. I'm going to be the biggest short model that ever lived. And, okay, so then from there, that didn't go anywhere. I went to, somebody suggested I try acting. So I met this guy named Michael Alton. And I go into his apartment, and he says, can you, I said, he says, have you ever acted? I said, no. He says, all right, here, take this and just read it and tell me what you do with it. He says, Al Pacino did it on Broadway. So I pick it up, and I'm like, hey, Bobby, what are you doing? Hey, you know, doing that kind of stuff. And just doing it.
Yeah.
And then he looks at me, and he goes, you've never acted. I said, no. Okay. So then I go back to my agency, and Grimay goes, Michael Alton, your acting coach, called. I said, oh, yeah, what'd he say? He goes, you want me to tell you what he said? I said, yeah, I want to know. He says, you're going to be the next Al Pacino.
Wow.
And I said, and then, but it wasn't time for me to hear that. So that started me losing it. I remember going home, just hyper, man. Dad, you know, Mom, he saw Al Pacino, you know, and that kind of stuff. And it started just getting, and I was learning monologues all night. I wouldn't sleep.
So would that be the manic phase?
Yeah, it's the manic phase. That's the beginning of the breakdown. There was the manic phase, and I remember now I'm not sleeping. I'll never forget. I don't know if I said it last time here, but I know I've said it. I was watching, this is no lie, this is what happened. Oh, no. Let me tell you, did we get into the night? Is this too long?
No, at all, dude.
Did I get into the night before I had a breakdown where I read the guy's mind and stuff?
No.
We missed that story last time?
Wow, that's amazing. Okay, this is how the breakdown started. It started with Michael Alton saying that.
Yeah.
Put me in a high.
Okay.
And then the high, you don't come down from the high. That's the problem.
Right.
So I remember going out with my girlfriend at the time. This is actually a cool story that I had. My girlfriend at the time, I'd only been going out with her for like two, poor girl. I mean, 2 weeks and now this guy's having a manic episode. So her parents didn't like me.
How possible is that?
They didn't even know me. They didn't like me. So I said, cool, all right. So one night I was going to pick her up. And I usually picked her up outside, didn't go to the door. So I remember that night.
In your badass car.
I had a different car than I had a Camaro. Okay.
That's pretty
I remember that night my mom comes in my room and I can feel weird. This is how you know. You feel like you're just not yourself, but it's high, like weird. So my mom comes in. And my mom and I have been very close. And I knew that I had to leave my home in order to grow up, because my mom did too much for me and whatnot. And she comes in my room, and I remember crying like a baby. And I looked at my mother, and she goes, what's wrong with you? My mom said to me, what's wrong with you? And I sat next to her, and I said, we got to let go. We got to let go. And she goes, well, she knew what I meant, but she was like, yeah. And then I went to the bathroom because I was going to pick up this girl. And I started shaving and I saw blood coming down my face. And I was really scared of my dad, like in his bedroom, like he was in there. And I was like, I needed to leave the house because I was scared of my dad. And I was shaving and there was blood. Then I get in the car and I'm hearing noises like, rah, rah, you know. So I get to her house. Check this out. And I go to the door. Manic. She answers the door. She goes, let's go. I said, no. I want to talk to your dad and your parents. And they were having a dinner.
Oh, no.
They were at dinner. And you know what I did?
What?
I went in and I stood there and talked to everybody in Spanish, and I charmed the hell out of them.
Yeah.
Like an acting.
Really?
Like an acting character. But do you understand how hard that was inside here?
Oh, yeah.
When I walked out of there, I could have collapsed.
Wow.
And so then, okay, so fine. So we go do what we're going to do. And we go back to my buddy Jeff's house, who's now he's dead. And we're on the couch. Now, I said, let's go get a Whopper. For whatever reason, when I go...
This is going to be your date? You're going to go to Burger King?
Yeah, when I go through... Yeah, it was. Yeah, when I get to this thing, I want to eat a Whopper. I don't know.
Hey, they're delicious.
They are delicious. So we go get a Whopper, come back. I take her home. And me and Jeff are like where Steve is right there. And I'm on a chair. And I said, Jeff, oh, man, I could read your mind, dude. He goes... I said, think of something. And he thought of something. And I said, this is what you're thinking about. He goes, dude, don't do this stuff. I said, do it again. He said, think of something. He thought of something. And I said it.
Wow.
And he left the room.
I'd run.
Yeah. Well,
he kind of
full speed
walked fast.
He was fast walking. I'm out of here.
He went to his bedroom and that was it. So that night was the beginning of the ugliness, because I remember I was having dreams of the devil in my dreams, nightmares, and the devil was in there. And I was like, what the hell? And then I woke up, and I was feeling way weird, man. Like, I went and sat on his balcony and start crying, just crying.
Yeah.
And then Jeff comes back and he goes, dude, what's wrong with you, man? And I said, I don't know, man. Something's happening. It's not good. He goes, let's go to the pool, dude. So we go to the pool downstairs.
Nice.
And he goes, what's wrong? We're right by the pool. And I said, I think I'm losing my mind. He goes, no, you're not. I said, I think I am. And I jumped in the pool with my clothes on.
Wow.
And this is something I really haven't talked about. And so I get out of the pool, and then he jumps in. And he looks at me and goes, see, I told you, you're not losing your mind. He's very, like, in the Marines, and he's... So I never forget, we're laying on the lounge chairs. It's hot. And I said, Jeff, close your eyes, buddy. I said, listen, I'm going to make it big. And we're going to be the happiest two guys in the world, man. We're going to be living our life. I'm going to be doing movies. I didn't know about soap opera. And he goes, all right. So then he calls my mom. I'm going to take you on the journey here.
All right.
Yeah.
He calls my mom and he says, there's something wrong with Maurice.
Oh, because you saying that sounded crazy to him? Okay, yeah.
Yeah, but he's trying to in front of me act like I'm not crazy, but
okay,
on
yeah.
the side
yeah.
he's going.
He's yeah. reading my mind. We jumped in the pool with yeah. our clothes on.
And
he's
now he's
going to
be a
balcony,
movie star.
Yeah. And now he's
right.
going to be Al Pacino.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I didn't have any, I was barefoot. I don't know where my shoes were. So I went home and my mom's like, why are you barefoot? I said, I don't know. And she goes, all right. So then... I remember, this is another, I would be watching Phil Donahue. This is no joke. You guys know Phil Donahue?
Oh, yeah.
Of course, yeah.
And I'd say to my mom, I know what he's going to say. She's like, hijo. I was like, no, watch. Boom. He'd say it. And I'd say it first. Okay, bro?
Yeah, there's no explanation for that.
And she, a little bit freaked, but acted like she wasn't freaked. So then that day, I'm upstairs, and then my dad comes home, and he looks at me. He goes, what's wrong? I said, I don't know, man. I don't know, Dad. I said, then I go downstairs, and I got a little violent with my mother. I never do that. Mm. Never. And I grabbed her, and then my dad grabbed me, and I said, no. And I become a little boy. I said, don't. So that night, I'm on the bed sleeping with both of them. And I just jump up, man. Start freaking. I told my dad I was the devil. And I had a little thing of Jesus. And I grabbed it, bent it. See, I'm the devil. Wow. My dad's looking at me like, there's no drugs involved, no
right.
alcohol.
Yeah.
Right, it isn't, you know, right?
Yeah.
So I remember he's giving me a look, and my mom's downstairs on the phone. I said, who's she talking to? My mom never forgets this. And he said, I said, better not be the cops. My dad goes, no, I think it's the doctor or something. I said, all right. Ding, ding, ding. I go downstairs, open the door, it's cops.
Wow.
And my mom said, I looked at her like she went like chills.
Yeah.
And it was a cop that I went to high school with.
Oh wow.
My gosh.
And he comes in, and I've been crying, but you know, he comes in and goes, what's going on? I said, how you doing, dude? And then I become normal. That's the manic. You can be normal and then be weird, right? And he goes, are you guys having a... I said, no, we're just having a little bit of a disagreement. But, you know, meanwhile, my dad's got tears in his eyes. My mom's got... I said, no, but we're getting through it. They couldn't do anything. So they left.
Wow.
So the next morning, they took me to the hospital.
A regular hospital?
It was a county hospital, dude, that they shouldn't have. Because it was just horrific. So then... I had to write my name. I wouldn't go in. So they had to get these big dudes to drag me in, but I had to sign. So I signed Rick Madrid, which is a name that Michael Olton, my acting coach, gave me a stage name.
Rick Madrid.
That's amazing.
Rick Madrid. I didn't sign Maurice. It was Rick Madrid.
Wow.
And they said to my mom, who's Rick Madrid? That's a stage thing. So they put me in there. Drag me in. My brother's there. My father's there. And I think I'm the exorcist. This is something I've never talked about.
Oh, dude.
And I'm like, I'm Reagan. And I'm spitting on my brother, spitting on my father.
Unbelievable.
God, right. And I'm doing that. And then they give me a shot. I wake up and I think I'm in heaven. I think I died.
Oh, my gosh.
Because you have to understand, when they brought me in, it was dark. Now I wake up and the sun's coming through. It's like bright.
Yeah.
And I think, oh, my, in heaven. And then I'm hearing somebody talking, like faint.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, oh, wow. And I wake up and I'm like, oh, my, this is what it's like to be dead, you know. And I said, cool, this is heaven. And then the doctor came in.
Oops.
And so then I was there for... I was there for a week.
Wow.
Because my buddy Manny, who, God bless him, he's dead. Him and Jeff, both are not around. They would always go to the hospital, and I'd be in restraints from my wrists to my waist to my ankles. And all I said to them all the time, all I said to them was, get me the f*** out of here.
Mm.
Get me the f*** out of here. If I have to escape, I'll escape. And so Manny, who was my best friend in the world, he would go back to my mom and say, we got to get him out of here, man.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, the doctor said, and they're like, well, he... I mean, on the left of me was a dude who got ran over by I don't know what. He's bleeding all over the place. He looks like freaking, I'm scared out of my mind.
So were you in a room with other people?
Yes.
So other beds. How many beds were in that
there
room?
There was like five beds.
Wow.
Guy in front of me is drinking his urine.
Oh, my
eating
gosh.
His toenails.
Ah.
Dude, this is like worse than a movie.
Oh, it was like a movie. And then the guy on the left is this guy who's sitting there with his girlfriend. It's not funny, but what I was doing, I was sick, right?
Yeah.
So the guy was with his girlfriend, and so I'd be there, and they're talking. I'd say, "Shut the fuck up," and they're like, "You talking to me? You talking to me, man?" I said, "Yeah, shut the fuck up," because I'm sick. So he's like, you better, and tell your girlfriend to shut up too. That's the way I would be. And then the guy goes, dude, if you keep doing that, I'm going to come kick your ass. I said, you can't kick anybody's ass, dude. So what does he do? He gets up. I'm like, no, I'm just kidding.
It was Bob.
Oh, man. They finally figured out that was, and they put me in these restraints. Man, this is a cool story. One night, I need to get out. Okay, so you can't get out of this. But I said, okay, here's my deal. Nurse?
Yes?
My lips are real chapped. Can you give me a Vaseline or chapstick? Okay. So she goes, gets me in. I'm rubbing the palm of my hands, man.
With the chapstick?
For hours. For hours.
So you could slip out.
I see the clock, bro. It's going from like 9 o'clock to 12 o'clock.
Just working it out.
Working it out. Working it out. Work it. Thank God I have small hands. And finally get one off. Woo!
Victory.
Do it again. On my palms right here. Just doing it and doing it and doing it. And get it off. It's like 4 in the morning, man. Okay. Now, how am I going to get the waist off?
Right.
This is in my
it's
book,
a lot
too.
Of chapstick.
Well, you can't. Yeah. So I think, okay. You get the knife that I eat with.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So the nurse comes in the next morning, give me food, and I put my hands down like they're in things or under the... And she leaves the food, and I steal the knife, put the knife there. So that night.
Like a butter knife to cut through
whatever
leather?
Whatever knife it was. It may have a little bit of ridge at the top. You
and
know?
These are leather straps?
These are leather straps, bro. Yeah. And if it was going to take 10 hours, I don't care.
What else you got to do?
So I just kept going, yeah. Kept going. And the nurse comes in. Oh, my God, he's escaping!
And it's then, not funny, but.
No.
I mean, at the time, it's not funny.
No. And so then after that, plastic knife, plastic.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't get to get out.
So you didn't get out.
Well, they got me out. Eventually, my mom and dad figured out that they need to get me out. So they transformed me to a place where you can walk around. But I'm with brother. Look, yeah. I'm the Jack Nicholson in the One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest movie, right? I'm looked normal. I mean, yes, when I did finally escape from this hospital, I weighed 129 pounds. But I looked normal. Yeah. And at night, this is what killed me, man. I was in a room. I had my birthday there, my 22nd birthday. I was in a room with bars. And you hear at night.
Just the moaning and the screaming. Oh,
and I'm scared anyway of anything of sleeping at night. But I'll never forget, I was with this, I think I told this, maybe not. I was with the nurse guy, right? And I was crying. And he'd look at me, he goes, you're going to be fine. I said, I don't know. And then I'd put my head on his shoulder and start crying, and he'd say, you're going to be fine. I have faith in you. I'm confident.
Wow.
And I'm saying, so he became kind of my guy.
Yeah.
So when I finally, when I left there and I did all my children, I came back to the hospital.
Oh, wow.
And he was there. And wow. I said, hey, you remember I used to cry on your shoulder? And he goes, yeah. I said, why did you think I would do well? He goes, because I was in Vietnam for a year in a mental hospital. And if I could get out of that, you're getting out of here.
Wow.
Wow, that's amazing. That is amazing, man.
It's amazing. And it was, you know, so then, make a long story longer, I would tell the patients to... Well, first of all, you got to understand what it's like in these places, all right? If you're a bad boy, what I mean by being a bad boy, when you don't take your medication... They put you in a seclusion room. Mm. And it's a room with four walls like this. no bigger than this room with one bed. And you're in there and you're just tied down to restraints.
So even though you're in a room by yourself, you're still restrained.
Restrained to the bed.
Oh, man.
And the story I tell, which is a beautiful story, is I tried to get to this, to the wall here. There was a latch on there, and I got, you know, restraints all the – I can't move, but I'm trying to get – finally, I get it. Tear the latch off the wall, and it's about that long. And it's a steel. It's like, you know, it's pretty intense.
Yeah.
So I lay back on the bed, and I take it, and I start cutting my wrists. And then I didn't get real in there, but just doing this.
Yeah.
And then I started to pray. And then I said, God, you know, if it's meant to be, why are you doing this? Help me, because I can't get through this. It's too much pain, blah, blah, blah. Then I took the latch, busted it in half, made it into a cross, and put it by my bed.
Wow.
Wow.
And, you know, a lot of what happens for me, I'm not saying everybody who's manic depressive, it's God and the devil fighting each other. And a lot of times the devil
wins.
No. God wins most of the time. Mm. Sometimes the devil wins. And that's why I think some people do kill themselves.
Yeah. Mm.
To be honest with you.
Wow.
So... So I would make, just lighten it up here. I would make this one guy. This one guy, he all bloody, his mouth is all bloody, and he's tall, and he's tall. Yeah. I said, buddy, listen, you're gonna call my mom. Why? I said, listen, you're gonna tell her that you're Dr. Heps.
That's my doctor,
and you're escaping. I mean, you're letting Maurice go. Can you do that? Who? Dr. Heps. I'm Dr. Heps. So I call my mom. They had a payphone, and you call.
Sure.
And I said, Mom, I'm doing good. Yeah. Dr. Heps says I can leave. She goes, I just talked to Dr. Heps.
Oops.
What do you mean? No. He's seriously. He's right here, and he wants to talk to you.
Dude. This is the worst plan.
Any good? Hello. Hi. Is this Dr. Heps? Yeah. Doesn't really sound. Yeah. This is Dr. Heps. The dude was just. And he goes, you can pick up Maurice. I said, all right, cool. So he hangs up and Paul, gives me the phone. My mom goes, that's not Dr.
Really? Nice try.
Yeah.
So I said, okay, cool. Here's what I'm going to do. I knew they were going to let me take a walk. My first walk outside. Okay?
Mm.
So I knew I had hard shoes. So I went to this other guy. Not that guy. Another guy.
Not Dr. Heps.
No. And I said, listen, bro. You need to give me your tennis shoes. Oh, no, these are my favorite tennis shoes. Okay, what do I got to do so you can give me your tennis shoes? I like that leather jacket you had on. You want my leather jacket? I'll give you my leather jacket. Just give me your tennis shoes. So he gave me tennis shoes. Next morning, I never forget the walk through each door.
Because you knew what you were going to do?
Yes. I take the first door, walk out, second door, and then the guy brought me out. We go out the front, and he's talking to a nurse chick. And then I start walking up the street. He's still talking. I get to the top. Boom! Jam. Leave. Run. They call the cops. I get to a... an insurance place, and I'm 129 pounds. I have no money.
What are you wearing? Are you wearing regular clothes? Or
regular
do you have...
clothes.
Okay,
but,
yeah.
But I'm just all baggy clothes. And I said, can I use the phone? It's an emergency. I have no money. Yeah, I use the phone. So I call my buddy Manny. And Manny picks me up. And that and takes me home. And so my mom gets all pissed at me when she sees me, like, what did you escape for?
So what happened? They didn't come get you?
Who?
The hospital.
The people.
No, because my mom said, what do we do? And they said, well, if he wants to leave that bad and you feel like you're safe.
Right.
Okay,
he
good.
Can stay.
So that was the end of it?
That was the end of that.
That time?
Yeah. And
that time,
now,
yeah.
You have to understand something, and this is probably goes hand in hand. The hospital is one thing, but the freaking depression that sets in.
Yeah.
After that, after all the pills are worn down.
Oh, yeah, coming off of that? Oof.
For 8 months, I'm rolling out of bed, falling off the bed. Like, I couldn't even... I remember going outside once, going like this, because I hadn't been out in so long. The depression is... We talk about suicides. That's what that is. That it's kind of...
What broke you out of that?
The most watchable man in America.
The most watchable man in America?
Oh, man.
What does that mean?
We will find out what that means and a whole lot more when we continue with part two of our interview with Maurice Bernard next week. So much fun, so much stories, we had to split it up into two. So be sure to join us next Wednesday for the conclusion. And next week, Steve and I are going to be on the road. Starting the 9th, Monday the 9th, we're going to be in Nashville, then San Antonio, Phoenix, Vegas, Seattle, Sacramento, and Irvine. So if you want to join us, go to stonecoldandthejackal.com for those details. And yeah, thank you guys. Sorry again for mucking up Maurice's first episode. I can't tell you how bad I felt about that. Oh, God. But we had a lot of fun doing it the second time around, and hope you guys enjoy it. And we'll talk to you super soon.